That exact same building on a totally different parcel in the city of Miami would not be under construction for 4 years. So you're talking about keeping, whether it's low-income seniors, working families, young adults who just maybe graduated from college, from having workforce priced apartments. You are delaying their homes by nearly 4 years because of incompetent bureaucratic processes. Now, 2017, we all voted, well, most of us probably voted for the Miami Forever bond, right? Because there was $200 million for flooding and resiliency and upgrading police stations and parks and all kinds of things. Most of this money's not even been set. They can't even permit their own projects to fix our own flooding. So permitting is important to everything. A friend of mine in Shenandoah, all she wanted to do was repaint her existing driveway because it was cracked. A year and a half to get permits. I met another homeowner over in Silver Bluff. They have, it's an older home, right? That's an older neighborhood like yours is. And they have those old crappy windows. They wanted to replace them with hurricane windows. Off the shelf, like literally you're talking about off the shelf Anderson windows, no fancy pants sizes where some guy's making them in his garage, like a real company making real windows that are used all across the world, using a licensed contractor. Took him 2 years to get permits to replace his windows. That's two hurricane seasons. We can't allow that. So I have been studying several municipalities. The city of Honolulu has cut their permitting time in half. They've been using an artificial intelligence process for a lot of the screening of the simple things, right? So for, you know, this hurricane windows, my name is Mary, I'm replacing my windows, these are standard windows, here's the numbers, the computer searches the Anderson website, yes, that's real, here's my contractor, here's his license, yes, that's real, you should get the approval for things like that immediately. This week I flew up just for one day, I can't be gone too much, as you know, to meet with the folks from Bloomberg City Labs, who I've known for a long time in my role in the county. They are actually saving money that will only come to the city of Miami if I win, to invest in technology to transform services like our permitting system to get things done. So not only do I have that on my to-do list, I've already been meeting with four or five companies. Francis Suarez, he's kind of a behind the scenes, not a particularly good mayor, but boy, is being a great spokesperson for our community, right? Like when he's on TV, you feel really proud to be from Miami. Beneath it, whatever, we can't get our potholes fixed. But we're grateful that he has talked about that. He's also recruited all of these tech companies to come here, and we're not using any of that in the city government. So I've met with several of the folks that have relocated now, have been here for 4 or 5 years, companies that are committed to being here. They're willing to build out modules for free, because we can test them on real case studies in the city. If they fail, we haven't spent any taxpayer money, no big deal, right? We already have a crappy permitting system, so the test can't be any worse. And then if it works, the reason they're willing to do it for free is they can sell it to others. So there are many solutions to this. And I know, you guys know, Miami's a weak mayor, right? So that theoretically the mayor can't do anything. Do I sound like a person that can't do anything? Yeah. They just never had a mayor that's had a job before, like managing people and processes. And, you know, I have had to lead the construction of new factories and manage fleets. And so I'm just different. I just bring a different work experience. And so I am able to look at these kinds of solutions that exist in other municipalities that we just don't have the leadership capable of doing here. So, yeah.
I have a question.
Can you introduce yourself?
Oh, my name is Matt. I live on Northeast First Avenue.
Okay.
It's a really small little micro neighborhood, as you can put it. Affordable housing, I'm all for it.
Yeah.
What is your take on, I can't remember what the law or the policy is, but it's, Robert, you'll know what this is.
Yeah. Live local?
Live local, and yeah. They're building a 40-something story. There's probably like 3 or 4 floors that are affordable. What? And we don't have the infrastructure to handle this.
So, that the background on that law was Kathleen Casadomo, who's a senator from kind of the Naples, Florida area, got really mad at these municipalities that would not allow any workforce housing, right? And as a result, their workforce was living 2 hours away and their business owners were going out of business. They couldn't find any staff. So she was very mad at a number of municipalities that refused to allow anything that would make housing more affordable. And so she passed the local, and one, our senator, Alexis Calatayud, and I went to talk to Senator Calatayud, and I said, look, this 1 mile radius is absolutely freaking ridiculous, right? Now, in downtown Embrickle, I represent downtown Embrickle. You know what I build in downtown Embrickle? Really tall buildings, right? It's appropriate. There's the Metrolinger, there's train, it's supposed to be walkable. Anybody that thinks there's, that they should use a car to get around Brickle needs to really seek psychiatric treatment, right? I mean, that's where our density needs to be. But what worried me about that original legislation is I could have a 100-story building in Brickle. The 1 mile radius means I could do that in the roads, which is all single family homes, right? Maybe we have some townhomes. So, there is this sense of being smart about being particularly around transit, adding some density. There's a lot of threats going on with Live Local right now. I do believe there are probably some ways the city could mitigate that, right? Folks are going to Live Local for a couple reasons. By the way, you can't get 40% of the units to be priced at workforce housing in a 100-story building. The math doesn't work out. It just doesn't. But you can build a 25-story building, and the math could work out with 40 to 50% of the units. But they're doing that because they don't have to use a public hearing in the city. And the city's process of getting projects approved can take 2 to 3 years. That's before you even apply for a permit. That does not happen in the county. We don't have people live locally in the county zone. Because our process is not outrageous. They just come through the process, no big deal. They meet with professional staff, we negotiate, you know, you need a more a greener barrier. No, that fence is too high, or if it's a school, no, that fence is too low, we need to get protected. It's just a much more civilized process. So I do think a lot of it is municipalities were just intolerable to work with. And so they bit their nose off, right, to spite their face. Live Local is a moving train. We can't stop it because, you know, for 2 years now, 3 years in a row, the state legislature has dug in. What we can do is make the city easier to work with so we have some negotiating power. Does that make sense? Like, if you go through the public hearing process, your permits go to the front of the line. Does that make sense? So, and then maybe we say, you know what? You want to build a 25-story building. We really want you to build a 15-story building. We're not going to get everything because the state has taken that power away. But right now, the city is unable to do anything. So we have to think about that. We have to think about that a lot.
Okay. Robert has some questions that were collected in advance.
Okay,
yeah.
You guys have like an online survey.
Yes.
Good.
So a lot of this has already been covered, and we certainly value your work on the county commission to date, spearheading transportation and other initiatives. What are the greatest opportunities do you think there would be to work as a city mayor with the county? And I didn't realize it was a weak mayor, so also within the city with the commissioners to, you know, for things like the affordable housing, transportation.
So a couple of things. One of the good news about coming from the county is many of the permits you're going to need also, particularly for business owners, actually come from the county. So having those relationships are valuable. I think most people are worried about me leaving a void on transportation at the county. So the city of Miami has a seat on what's called the Transportation Planning Organization. That person who serves in that role is the mayor. Francis Suarez has come to 2 meetings in 8 years. So the city of Miami has not had a seat at the table. Good morning. Has not had a seat at the table. I will serve on the Transportation Planning Organization, which is where the Northeast Corridor will continue to get done. Also, the Northeast Corridor, you know, our little commuter train along here, it's crucial to the city. 3 of the 5 stops are in the city. So you can depend on that to stay. Now, on the weak mayor side of things, it's a terrible form of government, but it's the form of government we've got. On the county commission, I'm 1 of 13. So the only way I get anything done is when 6 other people vote yes. Right? So there's no power. Right, there's power in my ideas. It's power in how I present my ideas, which, by the way, can be on the dais, can also be on TV, can also be on this and that. And to bring people along to pass legislation and change. So that isn't going to be very different on the commission, right? You're gonna have to get 3, and I think you all are probably aware there's an initiative to move to 9 commissioners that they're circulating signatures for next year. So I'll get you in touch with these folks. We need a bigger commission. It's ridiculous that 3 guys usually control the city, and we've not had the best of, you know, they call them the 3 amigos for a reason. So you have to sell your ideas. The mayor can propose legislation, right? I can propose zoning changes. I can propose permitting changes. I can propose all things. Francis just doesn't bother to do it, right? And I will not have a vote, but I'm gonna have a very big bully pulpit. And I will have some allies on this commission, right? I'll have, you know, I think you guys heard Damian Pardo, he's made some, he got a little ahead of his skis, I think, on adding an extra year. But fundamentally, I think he does want the right thing for the city, and he doesn't steal. Check. Good job. Commissioner Gabella, another person that would never steal a penny from anybody, and really wants a non-corrupt city, and he represents Alapata, a place that's really been held back and had no development, right? You guys are talking about overdevelopment. They'd be happy to have anything new built. That gets rid of the slum and blight in Alapata. Christine King, very easy to work with. I work with her all of the time on particularly the county projects, because, you know, we have county projects in Liberty City, county projects in Overtown. The county's in the lead, but they're in the city in Miami. So I am gonna have to be influential. But then the other path to power is I pick the city manager, and you can be damn sure that that person is gonna know how to work. Right, and that person isn't going to be corrupt, and so there is power. It's not the same way as at the county, but there's power in position, right? And Francis didn't use his to improve the city; he used his to improve the image of the city with people from afar. He didn't use it to help us, but I think I can do both. So. Okay, let's see,
was not aware of. Please explain your continued support for the Miami incinerator in the face of so much resistance from environmental activists advocating against it.
So there's a lot I'll repeat the question. How about with the microphone? This is my support for having an incinerator as part of the plan for the waste management system. So, first of all, I know this sounds very nerdy, but for the past 4 years, I have taken a number of vacations to places where all I do is visit waste-to-energy facilities. So I have seen them in downtown Vienna, right next to where people live. I've seen them in Stockholm, I've seen them in Copenhagen, I've seen them in Finland, seen them in England, right? Waste-to-energy facilities, which are so clean and so modern, are used all over the world in every modern nation except ours, right? We are the only nation that continues to landfill our garbage, right? And in our community, I believe the number is we as individuals produce 5 times more garbage than any other, per capita, than anybody else in the world. So we have millions and millions and millions of tons of garbage that need to be processed. When Donald Trump got involved and said it wasn't gonna be in Doral, my colleagues and the mayor caved, right? Because the mayor had been saying for years, you read every memo she's ever written for the past 4 years. This is Daniela. Like, there's nobody that loves the environment more than Daniela. she had always said that moving to a modern waste-to-energy facility, they call it a mass burn facility, it's a different kind of technology, is the most environmental thing to do, right? She was getting pressure from the president. She caved, in my opinion. I did not cave, and let me tell you why. First of all, we run out of landfill capacity in 2 years in our county, okay? So we have purchased one electric garbage cup, right? And it really doesn't work very well. So those heavy trucks, they're not, the electric technology is not there. So 2 years from now, every pound of garbage that comes out of your house is going to be trucked in a diesel belching truck to Central Florida, where it's going to be put in a landfill. Landfills leach into our water supply at a much higher rate than a mass burn waste-to-energy facility, produce lots more methane. Methane is the absolute worst gas for raising this planet's temperature. Minimizing methane has to be a top, top, top priority. So there is no place in the world that says landfilling, including the United States of America, that says landfilling is better than a modern waste-to-energy facility. And you can see them when you go to these European cities. You'll walk right by them. They decorate them. They make them into little art museums. They're tourist destinations. So we're so afraid. And bear in mind, these people are using the word incinerator, because that incinerator does sound bad, right? Sounds bad to me. But that is not what we're talking about. We're talking about using the most modern, cleanest technology close by. So the decision our county has made is egregious, in my opinion. We're going to be trucking your garbage with no plan, with no cost controls, until the world ends. So it can leach into the water and continue producing greenhouse gases. So I will go to my grave knowing that I'm on the right side of the environment in this. Now, let me tell you what this vote does to us, as City of Miami residents. Over the next 20 years, it is going to increase the cost of our garbage disposal. Right, the city collects your garbage, but they pay the county to dispose of your garbage. It's going to raise costs for all of us in the next 20-year period of time by $50 million. There's a couple solutions that raise it by 90, but I think it'll be somewhere around just about $45, $50 million. So it's bad for the environment, and it's bad for our pocketbooks. And it is really easy to sit around and go, we don't want to burn things, but the way these facilities are built in Japan and built in Europe, and I've met with these vendors and these folks that construct them, I still believe it's the right thing to do. And every time I see a garbage truck with Miami-Dade County on it driving 400 freaking miles somewhere else, and those people know we can't do anything about it because we don't have any landfill space here. The other thing that's important to know is, I know we don't like to talk about what comes out of our bodies, but we euphemistically call it solid waste, so it doesn't sound so gross. But we don't have a facility. Our previous facility, waste-to-energy facility, was not of that mass burn quality to deal with what comes out of our body. So we have been trucking that to Central Florida for years. Mass burn facilities are able to deal with that environmentally, so you would cut down all those greenhouse gas emissions from all those diesel trucks with that as well. So I have lost the fight, right? We're not going to have one. So we're doing the wrong thing for our pocketbook. We're doing the wrong thing for the environment. I've lost. But I don't feel bad about sticking up for what is technically and scientifically correct versus what is emotionally interesting. And I know a lot of people hate me for that, but that's life. Yeah. Your name,
I'm Andrew.
Hi, Andrew.
For those of you who don't know me, I'm a certified advanced placement environmental science teacher, and I just wanted to confirm that everything she just said was 100% scientifically accurate.
See? There you go, people. So this is what happens. I'm an engineer. I took a lot of chemistry and physics in college, and I hated it, and here it is coming in handy. So it's hard, right? You hear incinerator, but it's... And you're going to all pay that $50 million price, right? And for some of us, big deal. Let's say our garbage costs another $200 a year to dispose of. But for other people, $200 a year makes the difference of putting food on the table for your kids. So the county made an irresponsible decision, in my opinion. Okay, what's next on Google Drive?
Well, you might have seen me representing BPAC at some of the TPO
meetings, yeah.
But one of the questions we got was what are your plans to ensure the safety of pedestrians, runners, and cyclists in the city?
So, well, as you know, riding bike here is a recklessly dangerous activity. Little by little, we have managed to add cycling infrastructure in the Underline. I was a volunteer working on the Underline long before I got elected. I have one of the, you know, you guys have all volunteered with those scratchy t-shirts for causes, right, where they like rip your skin off. I have the original cheap one. Now I have the nice, now the Underline's a little sexier. They have the nice wicking t-shirts. So that's a project I've worked very hard on. In conjunction with that, we have the South Dade Trail, which will connect to that. You'll literally be able to ride your bike on a protected pathway all the way to Florida City. The Ludlund Trail is also under construction in parts. And we also have all of the bike lanes that you have seen, the protected lanes, you know, the little zebra things on the Venetian Causeway out. Those were projects of mine that I put in. I had to fight with FDOT to allow us to try them. We do need to do more on all of this. The Signature Bridge, quite frankly, is disrupting a lot of those plans that are actually drawn up. But we can't connect from downtown Brickell up here because obviously FDOT has that area destroyed by construction for probably another 4 or 5 years, but we definitely have those plans on the book. The only thing you can do is, first of all, slow traffic down. Sometimes our lanes are too wide, right? If you can just, and you can do that with trees, right? You can just plant more trees in the median, and then suddenly the traffic will be going 10 miles an hour slower. So it's interesting, there's ways to traffic calm, but we've got to build more.
And I'll send you something.
Yeah, you, I know. You always have more ideas yeah. than I do on that.
Well, I've been commuting my bike for 50 years.
Yeah.
So, and then you wanted to know more about us here. So we live in this historic neighborhood, and more often we are seeing the neighborhood threatened by encroachments from developers and preservation boards allowing demolition of historic structures, like Jordan mentioned before, and from neglect by homeowners. Is there anything you can see yourself doing as mayor to help preserve Miami's history and historic neighborhoods?
Well, this is very hard because the city has for a long time not allowed or not encouraged buildings, individual buildings, to be designated, right? And you can see even our larger structures, right? All of the beautiful cabins that, you know, on Fort Dallas Park continue to just, you know, rot to the ground. So there's one of the things that I've done at the county, which is, and particularly for multifamily, but we have created an affordable housing loan program, which essentially is at 0% interest. So particularly for smaller buildings in rural Havana, which I consider historic, right? Because they may not be designated historic, but they were built in the 1910s and 1920s. So they seem historic to me in my untrained eye. We have put together a plan where owners of those buildings can borrow up to $60,000 or $70,000 per unit to bring those units into code compliance. And then they pay them back basically at 0% interest. And so we've had a number of landlords do that. One of the things that is, it's insidious, but, and goes unnoticed, the city put in these outrageous parking requirements. And parking requirements, I realize we all complain about traffic, parking, but the only thing worse than traffic is no traffic, right? Let's remember COVID, that was bad. But parking requirements often make it impossible to financially redevelop a historic structure, right? Because they're now adding things that were never there, and so that also needs to be worked on. I have talked to Ira Jane. You all, when I get elected, I need you to kind of think of specifics. Apparently, the expansion of the Historic Preservation Department and Board has made it slower to get approvals and less likely to get approvals. So I've heard that from several people. I have no idea who all of you think that's true. But you all need to tell me, and I'm asking everybody this, I can't just have a complaint about the city, that the city is bad at this or the city is bad at that. I need you in the next couple of months to write down exactly what it was that either you thought was unnecessary or slow, because I can't fix generalities, but I can fix specifics. So you and your neighborhood get together. I mean, if there's one thing, and we all know that code enforcement, I see it in downtown, right? Don't forget all these downtown buildings are being demolished, and they're historic as well. I am pretty sure the city wants them demolished, but that's just me being paranoid. But older buildings need to be treated differently, and they need a different sense of sensibility from code enforcement. And we need a cultural change. Certainly there's life safety issues, and we're not gonna let a building collapse on anybody, that's inappropriate. But when you're talking about a historic building in downtown with small business owners, the faster you help that owner get back into business, not only are you a small business promoter, you're a historic preservationist. We just don't have that attitude in code enforcement. So I'm not an expert on historic buildings. I've managed to, just in the county, I think I've done affordability restorations on 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, on about 25 buildings that are historic, that have been renovated to continue their historic things. But I've been able to do that within government, not through the city of Miami, right? And I've been a victim of all of the, you know, shenanigans with Fort Dallas Park and the shenanigans with sequester ruins that are not protected and all of that. So give me your ideas, I'm not an expert.
I'm going to go here. We have another question on the back door.
My name is Belma Rose, and I'm asking a question relative to the historical preservation of buildings and the fact that BRC is being demolished for new construction. My concern is because these buildings were built typically different, they have asbestos and other things contained therein that are not friendly to the environment.
No.
So I'm trying to find out if the EPA entity has been utilized more in your knowledge to just be able to see if we are leaving our communities better as a result of these demolitions, or are we just building, leaving things into the soil and building on top of them?
I don't know the answer to that from the EPA perspective. I do know that if you're going to demolish a building and build, you are going to have to do the soil sampling that Durham will require to make sure whether or not you need soil remediation. I know because they made me do it on some of our affordable housing projects in the county. So I don't think you have to worry about that. They always find arsenic in the soil, right? We hear the environment say, like, arsenic is just in everybody's soil. If you go into your yard, it's there, so don't worry about it. But if they find anything else, you'll be required to either replace that dirt or remediate that in a different way. So if anything different is happening with the EPA, I'm aware of it. Yeah?
Hi,
good morning.
My name is Mary Kay Washington, and I represent the community of Liberty City. I have some questions, but I wanted to make sure I gave everyone from this community an opportunity to ask some questions first.
And I'll be up in Liberty City in 2 weeks, so if you want to talk about Liberty City when I'm up there, I'm happy to do that too. I have a meeting up, like a Saturday afternoon event there, so I can get there early and meet with you or after, whatever you prefer, because
okay, that meeting information is not in
shape. We just got it on the calendar. So.
Okay.
Why don't you ask one question, and then ask me one of the Liberty City questions, and then we'll find time that I'll talk about Liberty City with the Liberty City residents. Yeah.
The most important question is about transportation. Currently, the city of Miami services 13 areas with trucks. 11 of those 13 areas have trolley service on Saturdays. 2 of the 13 do not have trolley service on Saturdays. Those 2 are Overtown and Liberty City. The current data from the last fiscal year and so far for this fiscal year shows that Liberty City's ridership is higher than the two of the areas that has Saturday service.
The Wynwood area.
No, not Wynwood. It's actually the health district.
Yes, that makes sense.
The health district They service about 20,000 riders a year. Liberty City services about 65,000. That's 5 days of data.
Yeah.
Health district is 6 days of data.
Yeah.
So our ridership for them is about 55% higher. So we're trying to find out why, if on a Saturday there are 34 trolleys in service, and we can't get two reallocated to Liberty City on a Saturday.
So this is very interesting. Several years ago, probably 5 years ago, the county, actually it was right before COVID, so maybe it's closer to six, the county undertook what's called the Better Bus Network redesign. We had not redesigned our bus network in 4 years, right? Which meant like Kendall hadn't even been built. And went through a very structured approach to make sure our buses were coming more frequently and having better connections. And in that process, we invited every municipality to participate because the trolley system is part of our ground transportation system. Like, you don't care if you're on a trolley or a bus, you just need to get where you're going, right? And we looked with every other municipality to say, how can we, if the bus system's improved like this, where do we need your trolleys to go so they're not redundant, right? Coral Way is perfect. We have tons of service on Coral Way with the bus. Why the heck do we have trolleys on Coral Way, right? So it's a lot of redundancy. Every city realigned their trolley system to deliver better services to their residents, except one. Guess which one? The city of Miami refused to participate, right? So I still have all of that data. You're not the only neighborhood that feels as if the trolley system has not been adequately harnessed to get your folks from point A to point B. Allopat is another one. Has very dramatic stories that are exactly similar to what you're doing. So I have the trolley system on my radar to look at where the ridership is, look at what the costs are. The other issue with the trolleys, and I'm not exactly sure why the city has chosen to do this, they own those trolleys and they belch diesel fuel. And there are many other solutions. I'm on the board of the American Public Transportation Association, so I've been meeting with many other vendors that also are dealing with electric trolleys, like how can we do other vehicles. They're also using these very large vehicles, which are expensive to run on the weekends. Sometimes we might need smaller vehicles. So for example, on some of these smaller ridership things, there could be smaller vehicles. When they launched their trolley system, there was no such thing as these on-demand systems like VIA and others. And now they have the little circulators in downtown and they just launched them in Coconut Grove. That is something that every neighborhood deserves. So you're absolutely right that we need to look at how the trolleys are working, not just on Saturdays, right? But also Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, because you probably don't have frequent enough service on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday either.
But we need the service
you
on
do.
Saturdays.
I agree.
Okay.
I agree.
That's what we would like to do.
Yeah. All right. I'll go here. Jordan, you've already had one bite at the apple. Okay.
You touched a little bit about environmental issues you care about, but could you expand more upon your experience with the commission on environmental votes or agenda
items
you might have been pushing?
Sure. So a couple of things you might read. I had been working to ban fertilizer in the rainy season for several years. I could not get the votes, right? This is when we were talking about how do you influence. And then of course we had the very large fish kill. And I was able to communicate to my colleagues who are very much against this, that nitrogen and phosphorus fertilizer during the rainy season is simply rushing through your lawn, fertilizing the bay, the algae, you know, they're little plants, they're growing, they get fertilized, they suck up all the oxygen, the fish die. Not good. Part of the way I got that passed was I worked with fertilizer companies who actually know their fertilizer doesn't work in the rainy season. They don't want to sell you fertilizer in the rainy season because they don't want you to be disappointed. So it took me a while to harness that, but I passed the strictest fertilizer ordinance in the state of Florida, and that has held and not been preempted for like 5 years now. And we just did a study out of Nova University, and they're churning the data, but it looks like the oxygen level and the health of the bay is improved. So we may even have scientific data versus experimental, you know, experiential data to do that. So that's key. plastic. The state of Florida will not allow us to ban single-use plastics or straws, right? They just don't allow us to do it. But in county contracting, we can do things differently. And this took me, I barely got this passed because my colleagues did not want to do this. So I recently passed, we are going to, in all of our county contracts, which are a lot, and all of our county facilities, every time the contract comes up for renewal, we're going to be requiring the minimization of single-use plastics and styrofoam. So that means, and the zoo, by the way, the zoo is 100% styrofoam-free and plastic-free. You may have a, whether it's a, you know, you may have a beverage in a cup and it looks like it's plastic, it's compostable. Every piece of silverware is compostable. We have, and I, what I did with that, because I knew what these guys were going to say, oh, you know, it's going to be more expensive, we're going to be putting our organizations out of business. So the mayor, Daniela, the mayor and I, did that on the down low. We just slowly but surely made our zoo 100% plastic-free. And guess what? Tens of thousands of people go to the zoo, and they eat food, and they drink things, but there's not a plastic bottle of water to be seen. So that'll take a little while, but that means the airport, the seaport, every county park, which by the way, the county parks also include the beaches, every time there's a renegotiation, you're gonna see less and less plastic. Recently, I passed changes to seawall permitting. If any of you that know anybody with the seawall, it's 2 years to get a seawall permit. There was just a whole bunch of issues with environmental degradation in people's homes that they weren't able to fix. Now, DERM is required to get your permits issued in 90 days. And then most recently and most importantly, we're just talking about the incinerator. Well, all of my colleagues, they all voted to not do nothing with our garbage, right? They all voted to be lazy, basically, right? Oh, well, we don't want voters to be mad at us. I don't care if voters are mad at me. I'm willing to be unelected to take the right votes. Like, let's be very clear. Okay. I will always vote for what's right. And if people don't want me in office because of that, that's their personal choice. But my colleagues don't do that. So they all voted to basically not solve our garbage problem. And in the meantime, you know what was illegal in Miami-Dade County? Composting. And you can do it in your backyard. But if you drop off composting at a community composting place in a park, that's against the law. So for the past year, I have been working with environmentalist composting groups, and we've just passed, it should pass finally on final reading October 7th. We'll have a legal path to issue permits for community composters. So there's a great organization called Compost for Life. I'll introduce you guys to Francisco. So as soon as this passes on the 7th, it'll probably take him 6 weeks to get all the permits in place, because we can't have composters doing whatever they want, right? And they're composting outside the urban development in ag lands. But still, like, people live there. You still want a setback. You don't want it to smell. You want it to be turned properly. I spent a lot of time in compost piles looking at worms and things. Anyway, but that's what we gotta do. So, we believe in the next 2 to 3 years we'll be diverting 30,000 tons of food and yard waste into composting. But Compost for Life, they run a little business. They'll give you a little bin outside your yard. They train you, and then once a week they'll pick it up and they compost it. And then if you need to use your own compost for your garden, you can, you know, they're happy to return it, or they'll sell it to farmers. So that's, you know, so I got a list of sustainable building ordinances, floodplain ordinances. I mean, I go on and on and on, but those are some pretty signature pieces. And let me tell you this, these environmental changes, get them into policy. Every time you think of an idea, it's at least a year to get the scientific facts to make sure that the zoning code doesn't screw it up, right? Because even composting can be bad for the groundwater, right? When you're composting vegetative material, it's fine. But anybody that's composting meat products, like those meat products, depending on what they are, can have antibiotics and other things. We do not want those leaching into the soil. Those need to be composted on an impermeable surface and managed differently with the groundwatering plan. So sometimes, you know, everybody goes, oh, composting's so good. I'm like, no. But let me tell you what composting, all these things are good at. Releases less methane. So composting is a good option, and that'll be coming soon to a neighborhood near you.
Great.
Yeah, Jordan. All right, well, now one
last
more. Then
question.
That's it.
Last question.
That's it.
Okay. I'm sure you're aware of the furor over the giveaway of the Olympian.
Yeah, I have a different point of view.
But I want to ask about your support for cultural, for cultural, in addition to the Olympia.
Yeah.
I thought that was a terrible deal. Little Haiti Cultural Center.
Yes, they need a new roof.
Which is really a model for how a cultural center should work in every way. The Tower Theater that Joe Carroyo ripped out from the film festival and is now being wasted. The Artime.
It's falling apart.
A gem that's shamefully underused and mismanaged.
Yeah. So first of all, I've been a champion of the arts, and you know that that's where we always see each other, where you're usually reviewing something, and then I'm asking you what you think, because I'm too embarrassed to say what I think, because it might not be the right thing, because you are more astute about plays and music. But without a thriving arts community, we are not a fully formed city and a place. And we have got to make sure that that works. And by the way, it means it's got to work in every neighborhood. And the county has been extremely, extremely good about that, right? We have open theaters in near Liberty City. We've opened theaters in Little Haiti. We've opened one in Tropical Park, so the folks out west, we're right now building one up in Miami Gardens, right? The theater cannot just be sitting here in downtown, right? Where only people of certain socioeconomic classes get exposed to ideas and where we get exposed to different types of artists. So the county has one of the reputations of being the best arts and cultural. We're probably in the top five in the nation, right? It's not easy to do, it costs a lot of money and it's hard. The city, on the other hand, doesn't have a clue, right? And most of their, they don't, first of all, they're small. Let's be very clear. There's 450,000 people in the city, right? Albuquerque is bigger by like double, right? Like if I say Albuquerque, you think like podunk little town in the middle of nowhere, right? If you say Miami, you think we're a big city. That's not true, right? And so there are things your city government is going to be bad at because it's not big enough to be good at it, right? But they are atrocious. Well, they are, unless you raise property tax. Like, do you see where I'm going? Like, can they do that? Now, the county is able to do it because we have 3 million people paying into the base, right? And we have a big tourism tax. The city is smaller. The city is poorer than the county. We don't be confused about the number of people that live in abject poverty, right? So we are balancing the needs of the poor with the needs of the rich. And the city is terrible, like, at running arts institutions. And they've got to become better. So the Tower Theater, I've already spoken with Miami-Dade College. As soon as we're mayor, we have a new commissioner in that seat. The Tower Theater will be returned to Miami-Dade College. They're prepared to take it. That's already on the books. Little Haiti Cultural Center, I've met with several folks about the disastrous state of affairs. Number one, the building's falling apart. So forget about programming it. We have some structural issues. The roof is leaking. So that will require a community plan to see how to actively engage that. Right now the city is running it, the Parks Department, I don't really understand, but the county doesn't do any of that. Like, we put out and curate, right? We don't run any theaters, right? We make sure they get, the lights are paid and that the building doesn't fall apart, but we don't run the programming. We hire capable people to do that. And so that should be done at the RTV. It certainly needs to be done in the Little Haiti Cultural Center, but first things first, we gotta make sure that thing doesn't fall to the ground. And then the second thing we gotta do is advocate long and hard for the states to start funding cultural institutions. So, because that is where they're really suffering. You know, their money was really cut away. And then on the Olympia Theater, I have a completely different perspective from, I live downtown. I've walked down that street afraid of being hit by a brick coming down from that building ever since I moved there 14 years ago or whenever it was. It's been empty. It's filled with mold. Never had air conditioning. The city had human beings living in those horrible conditions the entire time. The city decided it was an unsafe structure. And you know what they did with those humans? They told them they had to move out. They had no housing for them to go to. So you know what we did with my team at the county? We're like, okay, all these people have to live somewhere. And we found them housing within the housing portfolio. So Everybody wants the Olympic Theater to be exactly the same, which is a beautiful theater on the inside, and then it's a dump on the top. What I can tell you, and with a four bottom, here's what I can tell you. You cannot have two things in the same structure that lose money. Something has to generate revenue. The arts lose money. That's their job, right? That is a community good. And so we have to generate revenue to support the arts, right? So originally my idea was I was gonna call George Perez and I was gonna get him to come back with his unsolicited proposal to put luxury housing on the top and then restore the theater and get, you know, probably my main college will run the programming for that. You know, I'm still working with the developer who's gonna run the program. It's certainly not gonna be that. So anyway, this came in with a school. Now, love it or hate it, charter schools have a ton of money in the state. Ton. They can get whatever they want. I'm against it. I grew up, you know, I'm a proud public school graduate, right? Sandia High School, home of the Matadors. But these charter schools have a ton of money. They have access to millions and millions and millions and millions of dollars. And that's what this renovation is going to cost. So I know they have the cash in the bank. I've already met with them to finance the bond. I love the idea of students going to school in a historic building. I love the idea of students being able to use that theater to learn and participate in arts. I love it as a neighbor. I love that we're going to have kids on Flagler Street. I love that we're going to have high school kids. I think it's thrilling. I think it's absolutely thrilling. I love that we are going to have another school that's accessible by public transportation. I love that they are agreeing to commit to school seats for the neighbors because there are not enough school seats, right? Because the one thing that does worry about me is the traffic that goes there. I have met with these guys and I said, here's what I will not allow. I will not allow you to be the creative programmer of the space. There's nothing that can happen in that space. It's on the National Historic Preservation. Right? So I can tell you the city's current plan, the building would have collapsed. The guys that run SLAM are great. I have another SLAM school in Little Havana. I work with them all the time. They take care of these kids. They take care of these families. So this is just another emotional issue, and I know we are going to disagree on this. People love the Olympia Theater. But it cannot run itself. We have to have people with money to own that building, spin off the cash so we can have an arts institution. And I'll say the same thing, I know some historic people are going to hate me saying this, but Marine Stadium. Marine Stadium is a destroyed building on the water that people in their 80s remember taking their boats and in their bathing suits watching a Jimmy Buffett concert. And so now they're yelling and screaming for the city to restore that. You know how much it's going to cost to restore Marine Stadium? Somewhere between $60 and $70 million. Now, if I sent around a Google spreadsheet and said, if I had $70 million, what would you spend it on? You would say more parks, more trees, more traffic calming, more bike lanes, flooding mitigation, affordable housing. So we have to get a grip on what's historic preservation and what doesn't make any damn sense. Now, will I work to make sure we restore Miami Marine Stadium? You bet I will. But it's gonna have to have a financial plan where when we bond out that $60 million, the arts and entertainment programming there can pay off the annual payment and the interest. Because I'm not gonna let our streets flood so rich people with boats can watch a concert in their bathing suit. That's just ridiculous, right? So I want our historic places preserved. That is why I am thrilled about this Olympia Theater partnership. I am thrilled that children are going to be in that building rather than rich people living in there. I am thrilled about it. I'm thrilled that they're going to walk to school. And I'm thrilled that it's going to be maintained by people that have done so responsibly in my district that I personally know. So, and there are many people that disagree with me. Just like you'd simply yourself. That's what makes the world go round.
We can discuss it over time. I just do want to actively say out loud that I object to the characterization of the Olympia as a place for rich people.
the building, the part that would be up there, that is not what I said. The, all of the other city procurements, bear in mind, the city's done a procurement 3 times for this theater and nobody's bid. The, all of the other procurements put luxury housing on top of it. That's what I'm talking
about. The theater.
That's not what I'm talking about. I was talking about what was going to go on top of it. Every other proposal was put luxury housing on top of the theater. This puts school kids and parents and PTAs and people playing instruments and kids getting to practice on the theater and kids getting to grow up in the arts. So when I trade, and by the way, my idea was luxury housing over the Olympia, so I had to realize my idea was, it was fine, it would have helped me pay for the Olympia so we could program it. I knew I needed cash for that. But I love this idea. I love that children are going to be involved in the arts. We don't have many schools like that. And in a perfect world, we run all these things ourselves. But the city doesn't have the cash to do that if we have too many other dire needs. Liberty City, right? We finally have moved folks out of those horrible, horrible buildings. I suggest before we demolish those buildings, everybody in this room, drive up to Liberty City. Because we're going to be demolishing those older units within the next probably 3 to 6 months. We have safely moved every family out of them and into brand new housing. But you want to drive by there. Do not miss this opportunity to look at what we had people living in. It's disgusting. There's no windows. There's no air conditioning. There's not proper lighting. 62nd and 14th Avenue.
Liberty Square.
But it was the Liberty City thing, but now we've got the pretty Liberty Square. You're right, Liberty Square. Go there before you demolish it. Ask, use carpool there, because that's the stuff I have to balance. I have to make sure our economy works, that we have a thriving art scene, that we're environmentally forward. But I also can't leave people behind in those decisions. And so I am going to make decisions sometimes that are going to lift people up. And maybe the Marine Stadium should come sit on the backbone for a little while we're building affordable housing to make people live safely and happily. So those are, it's going to be a balance of those things. But this city is filled with poor people. Do not miss the opportunity to drive by and see the way we used to have your neighbors live. All right.
Thank you so much.